Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So I did a little walking around the building. Reflect on some more positive things. And I feel a little bit better now. I do. Gonna have to find a yoga mat. I've been using some broken down boxes, some cardboard to exercise and do some of my dance moves in order to try to calm down a little bit. I'm not saying I'm getting good at it, but I can spin on the ground with the best of them, I guess. Like I have a turtle shell. Don't even know what that move's called, but what can I say? If it works, it works. Here's the phone number, 436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Mike calling in from St. Louis. Hi.
Hello?
Yes.
Hey, I'm surprised I got on so quick. But anyway, hey, what you're saying is absolutely correct. The circuit attorney, she's totally unqualified. She's a total racist, and she should have never been elected. I don't know how it happened, but I'm a former police officer, and I can tell you this right now. The crime in the city is out of control because of the lack of letting the policemen do their jobs. That's exactly what it is. She's got some crazy list of policemen that she's disqualified from. And you know what? The reason that is because they were probably the most aggressive policemen and doing their job better than some others that were just riding along.
Yep.
They were the aggressive ones that were doing their jobs.
Well, you have to look at the way that she's led that department, and I'm not saying that things have gotten any better because they haven't. Things are not getting better. In fact, you just find the roads that we're going down. It shouldn't be an issue. Let me back up. It shouldn't be an issue where we have to pick sides when it comes to this. The police and the prosecution should be working together. When the police are working in some pretty tough conditions, they're not getting the support they need. They go out there and they find and they arrest and they have the ability and all the evidence that they can hand over. And then you find on the prosecution side and the circuit attorney using some more of these, you know, social cues and, oh, we got to do this, we got to do that, as opposed to what the laws say and working against what the police are presenting. It's so frustrating to me. We need leadership that can work with the police in order to get something done. And it's not happening now.
Well, here's another point I'd like to make real quick. She's more concerned with this justice for all thing. That's her big thing that people are putting in. Instead of prosecuting people, she's looking to get people out of jail that maybe there was a mistake made, maybe there wasn't a mistake made, you know, but she's more interested in that than putting these people that are shooting, you know, the juveniles and the children in North St. Louis, all in North St. Louis. None of these children that have been killed or shot have been really in South St. Louis. They're all in North St. Louis, and she's letting those people down.
It's terrible.
Totally.
So terrible. Yeah.
She's not prosecuting anyone.
Mm-hmm. All right, Mike.
And that's why it's going on. And thanks for letting me on the air. Thank you very much.
I'm glad Mike called in. If you had something else to say, I'm sorry. It cut off there for a second. But I have so many frustrations, and like I said, I have to find a way to try to calm myself down. When I go home, I'm going to give my dog an extra long hug and belly rubs. That always helps. That's therapeutic in its own way. I'm going to have to get like a stress ball for the studio. KMOX stress balls. Oh, man. Well, there's some other issues that we're having when it comes to the city of St. Louis. And the idea of body cameras have come up over and over again. A lot of different cities have implemented body cameras. I think they're actually a great idea. A lot of times you find that when the footage comes out, you have the one side, which is everything's got to be police are terrible. So they edit the footage or they selectively take out something in the footage in order to try to make it look like the conflict began with the aggressive police officers harassing someone. And then you get the full video. and you find the events that led up to it, and you look back and say, oh no, police did everything that they could have done to try to prevent this. The only thing they could have done was acted at that point. And keep in mind, too, the police, when they're called out to these situations, they're not great situations to begin with. It's not a little old lady who's cooling a pie on her windowsill, and they find that they have a little bit extra, so they're called to the scene in order to help share the duty of eating these pies. It's not wholesome. They're called to some pretty terrible situations with some people doing some pretty terrible things. If you want to put the body cameras on the police, I think what that's going to end up doing, it's going to exonerate a lot of police officers in the actions. The questionable, police are bad all the time. If that's what you believe and that's your premise and that's what you're coming at, you know what? Put the cameras on and you can see for yourself. If there's anyone that acted in an inappropriate way, we'll be able to see it. If a police officer did something they shouldn't have done, we'll be able to see it. But there's not going to be the same he said, she said. We're not going to have to rely on lies, people giving false statements that could easily be found as lies, as trying to change the narrative. We don't have to rely on those things. What we can actually do is look at the footage. And this has happened. It's a pretty big trend across the country. You have police departments that pay out these big settlements, and you don't even know how much money the police are paying out. When they do the budgeting here in St. Louis, they have to account for more money when it comes to settlements. You know what? Let's cut that out altogether. How about we have the video evidence, and if someone was the aggressor, they were breaking the law, they weren't complying with orders, they were not acting in a manner that would be safe for the people around them, they were, okay, police have to intervene. This is what I don't want to happen, because this is what I think a lot of people have the impression of, oh, you know what, we should just, we gotta cool things down, we gotta back off or whatever. If police are called to a situation and there is someone that's an aggressor and they're doing something that's illegal and the police say, you're under arrest, and the person resists or fights or punches or pulls a weapon out or whatever it is, I think some people would rather see the police just back up and say, okay, you're no longer under arrest. For the sake of everyone's safety, we're just going to leave, and you're just going to be able to continue doing what you're doing. There shouldn't be an undo button when the police say you're under arrest or you're being taken into custody. There shouldn't be an undo button that says, well, as long as you act violent enough or as long as you flash a weapon, then we're just going to naturally have to back off because that's what the situation calls for. It shouldn't be that. It should be you comply with the order and you sort things out. That's simple as that. But when you have these socially minded type of individuals in the city or wherever, it's all across the country, they believe that, oh, under arrest is only used when the police officer is racist and they're only there to harass certain people and they only follow through with it because of the color of someone's skin. It has nothing to do with the circumstance that person put themselves into. Nothing to do with it. It's a big problem. Again, you put the body camera on the police officers, and if there's a discretion, you see what the officer says, you see what the officer has seen, and then you find out the way they act, and that's it. You don't have to rely on people lying, pretending they're witnesses they saw or whatever, because they hate the police or they hate whatever and they want to stick up for their buddy or whatever it is. And then you find that it turns into this big deal. And the next thing you know, people are protesting. Next thing you know, people are rioting and they're throwing bricks through windows and urine bombs and all of these things based on false information because they don't care if it's true or false. They just know they hate the police. So here in the city of St. Louis, body cameras, we've been trying for the last couple of years. I agree with Lewis Reed, and I support Lewis Reed in his efforts to try to get these things. Mayor Lyda Crewson says the priorities are not there yet, okay? There's other things that they need to spend the money on. Let me ask you this. What are the priorities in the city of St. Louis? Should we fund these body cameras? Should this be made a priority? If you don't think they should be a priority, you tell me what should be done first. What is the priority then? 436-7900 is the number, or 800-925-1120. It's Overnight America, KMOX. I only want to talk about this just for a little bit, and I know this could be a bigger topic if there are some changes. I will give credit to Elliot Davis, Fox 2. I love his You Paid For It segment. I think he does a great job with that. But he actually spoke to Mayor Lyda Crewson about the body cameras. I wanted to play a little bit of that segment from Fox 2. Also coming up, we do our weekly get together with our friend Rich Rubino. I call him a political professor. He's so good at political history. I wanted to talk about some political gaffes, and Joe Biden sure has made a few, but he had some really good ones from history. And you may have heard that there is some consideration, if not, maybe there is a little bit of a push to purchase Greenland. Why? Why? But I wanted to talk to him about the history of purchasing other countries. And the United States certainly has a history of that. So we're going to talk to our friend Rich Rubino coming up in about 10 minutes from now. So here's the Fox 2 segment where they were talking to Mayor Lyda Crewson about the body cameras.
Body cameras is one of those things. It's $4 to $5 million a year for body cameras. And what we have focused on up till now is new computers in cars, GPS in cars, new car cameras. And also, we have new radios on order. You know, there is a hierarchy of needs that we have in the police department and in all of our departments, frankly. We've got to meet those needs first.
So those are the needs that she says come before the body cameras in the city of St. Louis. There's a hierarchy, and these are the needs. I get it. The police are definitely behind when it comes to funding. They're not getting the support they need. All of these things would be great in order for the police to have. Isn't that crazy where they have to beg for things that are necessities for their job? But then you look at things like body cameras, which, you know what the body cameras most effectively do? When there's a dispute in the city of St. Louis and there's a police officer involved, and you know what the national media, like the vultures, the scam artist vultures they are, they start circling around the city of St. Louis and they think this will be great for our viewers on CNN or MSNBC. This will be so good. Oh, we're going to write this up in the New York Times and the Washington Post. Oh, this will be so great. Another one of these racist St. Louis police officers that are out there. Oh, here's another example of all of these things happening over. And then the vultures just circle, 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 circle. You know what the best thing could happen? And for the city of St. Louis, this is what the best thing could happen. Before all of that happens, before this, you know, bias hurricane starts to form over the city, they release the body cam footage and show that, here, this is what happened. And the police were right, and they did what was according to protocol. It's not race related. It's because the guy had a weapon. The guy was aggressive. The guy was resisting. The guy had 10 chances. This is what led to it. So if you want to try to improve the image of the city of St. Louis, you get ahead of some of these PR issues that we've been running into with some proof. And you get that out there as opposed to the narratives and the lies that seem to get out first. So how about you work on that? And that, to me, is worth $4 or $5 million a year. All of these lists and all of these people that write about the city of St. Louis over and over and over again about how terrible this place is. You know what? We got issues. We got a lot of issues we need to work through. Maybe you can start eliminate some of the false issues, the ones that we can actually prove. Here's some more from Fox 2.
Don't you think body cameras, though, is a critical need that could help the city and the police department in an emergency? Heaven forbid there should be a police-involved shooting.
I think
body cams could make the difference. Isn't that an essential purchase, don't you think?
I think body cameras can be helpful both to officers and to residents, but I don't think they're more essential than a police radio that works.
Many major police departments now have body cameras.
How bad is it in the city of St. Louis that we have police radios that don't work? If anything, that's a reflection of how terrible you've allowed the funding to get so low to the point where you have police officers that don't have working radios. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Dane, who's calling in from Illinois. Hi.
Hello, Ryan. How's my favorite buddy doing on radio this morning?
You know, I'm feeling like I need to take some time to relax and meditate or something. I gotta get away from some of these stresses.
What is going on with the city of St. Louis? I don't get it. You know, if they have the money to, you know, where the computers and all that and cars. If it was me, and if I was in charge of that money, I would buy body cameras. Mm-hmm. Because if what good is it if a cop doesn't have a radio that works?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, what's wrong with this picture?
Yeah, what is wrong with the picture? Why is it getting to the point where we have these issues with equipment? Why is it even? How did it even get to this point?
I called earlier, you know, pardon me for missing part of this, but what happened at Ballpark Village today?
No, this was back in April of 2018. So,
okay.
Yeah, this is the what happened was there was that major court case. Well, essentially, someone went up to Ballpark Village, shot, was apparently targeting or whatever. Bystander gets shot in the head, killed. Okay, person was innocent bystander. So the person that did that, the one that left Ballpark Village, came back, started shooting, ended up killing someone that just happened to be there celebrating their birthday. By the way, married 2 weeks at that point. 2 weeks, just off the honeymoon. Wow. And that person dies. Well, they gave the person a lesser charge and only said 4 years in prison. 4 years maximum.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's all crazy. The city of St. Louis has gone crazy.
I think they just need to get the body cameras to be done with it, because then it would show that the cops were right and these thugs were all wrong.
Yeah. It would be pretty clear.
That's what they are, is a bunch of thugs.
All right. Thanks, Dane. Good to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
So let me just make this point real quick, because this maybe is the better point. How many times do we have to come out here and say, you're not giving the support to the police, you're not giving enough support to the police, you're underutilizing Chief Hayden in his plan, you can't get up to the standards that are necessary in order to police a population like this, to try to turn the tide in some of this crime that we had? And, you know, we have all of these concerns when it comes to it. And then the mayor comes out and says, oh, we got to get working radios for our officers. Well, you're proving their point. If it's to the extent where they don't even have working equipment, it proves that you're not giving them the support they need. On the city side, they shouldn't have to beg for these things. Come on now. Come on now. You're just proving the point. Here's a little more from that Fox 2 piece.
A lot of them at the urging of their own police chiefs. St. Louis County Chief John Belmar pushed the county council to give him the okay to buy body cameras. Chief Belmar sees it as a way to protect his officers from false accusations and also to reassure the community of exactly what happened in cases of police-involved shootings.
St. Louis County is okay getting body cams.
They have.
Doesn't that put more pressure on St. Louis City to follow suit?
I think it does, however. St. Louis County got new radios a couple, 2-3 years ago. St. Louis County has more police cars.
St. Louis Board of Aldermen President Lewis Reed is pushing Mayor Crewson to get body cameras now. He warns it would be worse to get caught in the middle of a police shooting incident with no video to prove one way or another what happened. According to Reed, it's just like deciding not to buy insurance.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with Lewis Reed. I like Lewis Reed. I've had him on the show. It's been a long time. Maybe we should get him on again. But he's absolutely right when it comes to these body cameras. You know, we have to get to our friend Rich Rubino in political gaffes. There's certainly many of them to go around. In fact, Joe Biden said he's a political gaffe machine. Is that what he said? So let's bring our friend Rich Rubino on for our weekly talk and chat with him. And let's look at through the history of politics, some of the more famous political gaffes next on Overnight America KMOX. Our friend Rich Rubino, he comes on Monday nights for Overnight America. His book is American Politics on the Rocks. You can look it up on Amazon. Rich, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to be here again.
What's this with Joe Biden? He says he's a gaffe machine, and I've seen a lot of photos of people photoshopping shoes in his mouth lately. I don't think this is new for Joe Biden. He's kind of always been this way.
Oh, no, absolutely. It's kind of interesting. It's almost become his brand. So many people speak what I call politicese, where, you know, you try to say something. For example, when somebody's thinking of running for president, and everyone knows they're thinking of running for president, and they make a statement like they say, like, well, right now I'm not running for president. Or they're saying, well, you know, I'm not even, that's so remote right now. I just love the job I have. Something like that, where people kind of, everyone, you know, has some sort of, I guess, BS meter, and they know when somebody's saying that they're 99% sure they're going to run for president, for example.
Right.
Joe Biden, when they asked him back in 2006 about this, about whether he'd run in 2008, he said, yeah, I'm thinking about it. So it shows, I think, to a certain degree that there's a certain modicum of honesty when he speaks. But, you know, it goes back in 1977, he had offered an amendment to the criminal code, and his staff actually changed the wording of an amendment. So when he was speaking, he told his colleagues, he said, obviously, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. He said, I thought I had a 2-for-1 provision here. The staff, in its wisdom, rewrote it. And I guess I don't know what I'm talking about after all. So it's interesting, because he's almost like he's so candid that people are so used to having politicians trying to pander to them, or trying to speak in a certain language that most folks don't talk to. I mean, a perfect example, whenever there's somebody that's whenever a candidate's running for office or a candidate's in office and they hear that somebody, that there's going to be a potential opponent running in a primary, the statement you're invariably going to hear is something to the effect of, Senator so-and-so welcomes anybody into this race, and Senator so-and-so has a vision that, you know, welcomes anyone into this race, and Senator so-and-so wants to continue the hard work he's done on energy conservation, you know, bringing jobs back to the state, education, and all these other important issues vital to our state, something like that. It's a statement that only politicians would make. And Joe Biden has certainly made his share of mistakes, but, you know, there's been other times in history where politicians have misspoke, and it's kind of the perfect example back in 1968. Hubert Humphrey was asked about, you know, President John. He was actually interviewed by Playboy magazine, and so people apparently do read Playboy for the articles back then. And they asked him the question. They said, you know, they were asking about President Johnson's support of the Vietnam War, and he said, "No sane person likes the war in Vietnam, and neither does President Johnson." So that was one. That was one mistake that kind of, you know, got him in a little bit of trouble. But it was just, you know, obviously he was misspeaking, and people certainly misspeak. Another example, and sometimes people write in parentheses, they'll put words that they want the president or the politician to say, but it's not necessarily, you know, part of the speech. And in 1976, basically Gerald Ford was speaking, and he started saying, you know, I say to you, this is nonsense. Mm-hmm. And then in parentheses, someone wrote the words with emphasis. He was supposed to say, I say to you, this was nonsense. And then he says, I say to you, this is nonsense. With emphasis, you know.
That's easy to do. It's like the Ron Burgundy, where he sees a question mark on the teleprompter.
Yeah, it's very. I mean, politicians will sometimes they'll say things that, for example, Barack Obama. It's interesting. He said at one point, he said something to the effect, "It's wonderful to be back in Oregon." He said, "Over the last 15 months, we traveled to every corner of the United States, and I've now been in 57 states."
Yeah, that's right.
It turns out, actually, what he meant by that, he had visited, you see, in the Democratic primaries, the Republican primaries too, territories have delegates. So Barack Obama meant to say that essentially that he's now been in all 57 states, and he included in that folks places like the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
So he was including that in there, but he said 57 states, and folks immediately picked up on it. They said, he said 57 states, you know, does that mean that he doesn't believe that there are actually 50 states, that perhaps he doesn't actually know that, and people are questioning, you know, whether he was ignorant.
Yeah. Are there even seven territories that the United States controls?
Okay, there's the District of Columbia.
Right.
There's Puerto Rico.
Right.
There's Guam.
Guam, okay. So Virgin
America,
Islands.
America Samoa,
okay.
The Northern Mariana Islands.
Uh-huh.
And the U.S. Virgin Islands.
U.S. Virgin Islands. Okay, so that's six. Do all of those have voting rights? Do they all vote in the presidential election?
No, they don't, actually. Well, the District of Columbia has a special, there's a constitutional amendment, the 23rd Amendment, which allows the District of Columbia to vote in presidential elections. So they get three electoral votes.
Mm-hmm.
And despite, you know, basically the three electoral votes go to whoever wins, and obviously it's going to be variably, it's about 90% of the 90% goes to the Democrats, so they get those three electoral votes. America, Samoa, Guam, Puerto Rico, all those places, they do not get a vote in the presidential election by the general election. However, the parties are independent organisms, so in the parties, they actually give these territories delegates. So there's actually is a primary, for example, in a place or a caucus in America, Samoa, in Guam.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to the conventions, there's actually a delegation for places like America, Samoa, Guam, and Puerto Rico.
Right.
Usually America, Samoa is about as far back as you can go. But these places do actually get, they do actually get representation in the parties. Now, in terms of congressional representatives, Washington, D.C., and Puerto Rico, Guam, U.S. Virgin Islands, the Northern Mariana Islands, they don't get any representatives in the United States Senate. However, in the United States House of Representatives, they have non-voting delegates.
Mm-hmm.
So basically their job is they get paid, they have staffs, and they can introduce resolutions, and they can vote in committees, but they cannot vote on the what they cannot do is vote on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So if a resolution comes up, because they're not part of the 435 voting members, they cannot vote on that, but they can certainly influence other members. They get offices. That type of thing, but they did. So I guess, you know, D.C. always argues taxation without representation because they're taxed, but they don't have voting representation. So that's always an argument that they bring up. But that's essentially the right that they have. And Northern Mariana Islands were the most recent one to get a to get a congressional delegate. And Puerto Rico, actually, interesting trivia, I guess, they actually have what's called a resident commissioner. So the Puerto Rican representative to the House of Representatives is the only representative who serves 4 years, not 2 years.
Oh, yeah. Just with the distance and how far away. I understand that. Well, one other gaffe, and this may be one of the more famous gaffes of all time, is Dan Quayle. Maybe you can talk about that one.
Yes. Well, he's got a, he was a gaffe-prone machine. The one everybody is going to be talking about, though. So basically, he was at a spelling bee. And he was at a spelling bee, and somebody, so he has
a card,
and the card, the word he's spelling is potato, and in the word, in the card that he's reading, there's an E at the end. So you spell potato with an E. So the student gets up there in the spelling bee and spells potato, but he spells it without the E. So Quayle then looks down at the card and says, oh, no, you're wrong, and says, there's an E on that. So he puts the E, and then he applauds him. So, and then the Clinton campaign kind of took advantage of that when Al Gore became the running mate. They would have a picture. It would say Clinton Gore, and the Gore would be a capital E. So that's how they kind of how they kind of emphasize that. But Quayle was known for making gaffes. He's kind of an interesting political figure. He's somebody who I think probably peaked a little bit too early. I mean, he was like 41 years old. Basically, what was going on in 1988 is the Bush campaign, George H.W. Bush, was looking for somebody that could propitiate the conservative bloodline of the Republican Party. Bush had run against Ronald Reagan in 1980, and Bush had called Reagan's supply-side economic plan voodoo economics.
Yeah.
So a lot of folks didn't think he was really part of the cause. They didn't think he was really a fellow traveler or a true believer. They thought basically he became Reagan's vice president, and he went along with the program, but he wasn't necessarily, you know, somebody who had really supported it. And in the primary that year, a lot of the Republicans had gone with Jack Kemp. Newt Gingrich and Trent Lott, for example, in the House leadership, both supported Jack Kemp because they thought he was a true heir to the Reagan legacy. So essentially that year, Bush was looking for a young person who was conservative, who he thought would galvanize conservative voters, and he chose Dan Quayle, and Quayle proved that he wasn't necessarily up for the challenge. I mean, a great mistake he made, when he actually became vice president, he was talking about the 20th anniversary of Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin walking on the moon. And there was a congressman at the time. It's actually the predecessor of John Boehner. This is a guy John Boehner actually beat to become a congressman. And his name was Buzz Lukens. Mm-hmm. And Lukens at the time was in the news. And he was in the news because he was convicted of paying an underage girl for sex.
Yeah, boy.
So instead of saying the word, Buzz Aldrin, he said something to the effect of, as America celebrates the 20th anniversary of Neil Armstrong and Buzz Lukens walking on the moon.
Oh, no. Oh, no. That's so embarrassing. Oh, no.
Can you imagine?
That's when a staff member rushes and tries to stop. We gotta correct that real quick. That's a immediately correct situation. You don't want to let that one linger too far.
Another one. Speaking back of the Bush presidency, for 1 year back in 1988, again, he was trying to tether himself to Ronald Reagan, and he says, for 7.5 years, I have worked alongside President Reagan. He said, we've had some triumphs, some setbacks. Then he said, we've had some sex, setbacks.
Oh, no.
so he certainly had his share that year. That year, certainly, and at one point, somebody put the word message, I care. When he was supposed to be talking, he was at a town hall meeting in Exeter, New Hampshire, and someone wrote in parentheses, message, I care, and he actually said it. He said, message, I care.
Yeah.
You know, because he was actually reading, just like Ford did, he was reading the one that was in the parentheses. You know, actually, Joe Biden had another one that was really fascinating. So Marty Walsh gets elected mayor of Boston, and Joe Biden is one of the first ones to call. But unfortunately, he gets the wrong Marty Walsh and congratulated that Marty Walsh on becoming mayor of Boston.
I can see how that happens. Do you ever see that documentary on Netflix about Mitt Romney and the presidential run? And then one of the very famous scenes was after they were watching the television scene.
Oh, yes.
And he's sitting in the room and his family's there and he realizes it's not going to happen. And then he starts to say, does anyone know the number? Who do we call? What are we supposed to do here?
How do you get the president?
Yeah. It's one of those moments, you figure out, like, how? Wait, who do I call? Where do I go? Because you don't sometimes know those things. And I know. So we're going to continue our conversation with our friend Rich Rubino coming up next on Overnight America KMOX. He's our friend Rich Rubino. We do a weekly segment with him. His book, American Politics on the Rocks, you can check it out. Always have a fun time with our political historian. There's one other thing in the news I wanted to ask you about, and maybe we can talk about this. I saw that there was some interest in purchasing Greenland. So every once in a while, the United States will purchase territories. It's been a long time, I think, before that's happened. Historically speaking, it's possible for the United States to just, you know, buy a country if they want to.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure that, you know, we are $22 trillion in debt, but if you want to spend money on buying other countries, maybe there'll be oil there or gas there or something.
Well, maybe
that will alleviate that.
An investment. What did the Onion or Babylon Bee, one of them said that he was going, they were going to put like, they're going to redo the floors and kitchen and flip it for a profit or something like that. But so what would happen? Like in the case of trying to purchase a country, historically speaking, you know, what would happen?
I guess you'd have to, I mean, I would assume in that case you'd have to go to Denmark and you'd have to say, we want Greenland, essentially. We say, I guess you could say something to the effect that we hear it's really nice, you know, that's why they call it Greenland, right?
Yeah.
Obviously must have nice weather.
Yeah.
So they say, yo, yeah, yeah. And then I guess they would just, I guess you would somehow, I don't know if you'd really say you would annex it as much as you would just kind of, I guess you would just buy it. I mean, then the question can say, well, what if somebody else, you know, what if, what if, say, Eritrea says they want America Samoa?
That's interesting. Do we
have the power to just kind of to sell it to them? I mean, it's a fascinating question, I guess. It's not something that really comes up too often. Swords folly, that's what they called it at the time. Mm-hmm. We had a Secretary of State. This was back during Andrew Johnson's administration in 1867, and he signed and his name was William Sword, and he signed a treaty at the time with Russia, and they basically got Alaska for $7 million.
Mm-hmm.
This was back in 1867, yeah. And, you know, people at the time were saying, why are we purchasing Alaska? But it turned out that there was obviously a lot of, oil, and there was certainly gas there, and it eventually became quite an asset for the United States. I mean, now we have a point where there's so much oil there that there's actually, you know, it's actually an allowance that people, essentially citizens of Alaska, get certain money from the oil revenues for not doing very much. That's one of the reasons why Sarah Palin had a 91% job approval rating when she was governor there. And a lot of Alaska governors are very popular. It's just because there's so much largesse that comes from the state because there's just so much natural resources that the state has. So it actually ended up working. It certainly worked out for the United States, you know, to purchase Alaska. Well, and then I remember Sarah Palin saying that she was governor of the biggest state in the country.
What if we do like a three-way trade? Because there was talks about selling Montana to Canada to make some money, and then we'll acquire Greenland, and we just got to find another country to work with. Maybe Canada can give something over to someone else, and it'll just be like a sports trade.
How about a country to be named later?
A country to be named later would be the way to do it. It'd be interesting.
And future considerations.
Well, I look at Guam, and a lot of Guam's used for military purposes. I wondered, okay, maybe this could be part of the budget for the military. We just approved a lot more funding for it. Of course, some of that may be going to build a southern border wall. But what if some of that money, if we got it out for a deal, and it's basically used for military purposes because it'd be nice to have an outpost. Who knows? Who knows what the true intentions for something like that would be?
Maybe we could give them Farrell Island too, where I think there, there's an island that they have a bunch of feral cats on.
Yeah, Farrell Island, really?
I think it's called Farrell. I'm trying to remember. I think it's called Farrell Island. I know that's known for having a lot of feral cats on, but I'll have to look that up. But in terms of trading, I always wonder why you can only do it in sports.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't you also do that in other fields?
Like what?
For example, they could trade a radio show host. They could trade you to some place in, you know, they could trade you to some place in Indiana, uh-huh. And they could trade somebody back. You know, they can trade them back and trade people back and forth. Maybe even trade from one field to another.
You know, that would be something that happens in a lot of companies. And I think radio might feel a little comfort in knowing that they don't actually lose a job. They're given the option of moving. That's probably not the worst thing in the world. Maybe if they had a stronger union like the sports had, in that way you could at least be taken care of. Isn't that weird? That happens a lot of times in radio. It's almost like there's so many different radio stations, and it's you're working your way up. So you're hoping to go from the minor leagues to the big leagues, and eventually
you work your way up.
There. And I think a lot of companies want to keep their talent from within the company. We're not as organized as that. Radio's nowhere near as organized as a
free agent.
Yeah.
Once you become a free agent, then I guess you can choose. Maybe they should do it with like bar patrons too.
I love this three-way trade stuff. You have a lot of teams that like dump for the salary cap. There could be, you know, like multiple players involved in futures, right? Equipment, they can throw in like a bag of satellite equipment or some of their like audio video cords, computers, things like that. You know, if you get traded for a bag of quarter-inch adapters, then you know, ugh, you got some problems there. Well,
that would totally work, and then I guess you'd have someone like maybe they could trade like maybe trade Howard Stern for Rush Limbaugh as kind of the big ticket items.
The big blockbuster trades.
Yeah, that would be the blockbuster deal. Yeah.
Would you play fantasy radio if they would have to have a league online somewhere too?
Well, I mean, you could. I guess you could. You know, maybe you could trade. Maybe somebody who's at the end of their radio career, you could trade for a few prospects.
Journeymans, yeah. So prospects, out of college. And then you have to start scouting the high schools. You start to radio draft. Oh man, this would be great. I love the idea of this. Rich Rubino, your book is called...
How about politicians, too? Trade one state, maybe Massachusetts and Utah could trade politicians.
I think there would be a lot of people that would be up for getting rid of politicians in their area, but the return on some of those would probably be not so good. So American Politics on the Rocks, The Bizarre Side of American Politics. Your book is online. Amazon people can check it out, and of course they can check you out online. If they wanted to see the things you're doing, where can they go?
Just go to my Facebook page and go to Rich and then last name Rubino, R-U-B-I-N-O, or go to www.polita-geek.com.
Polita-geek.com. Rich Rubino, American Politics on the Rocks, The Bizarre Side of American Politics, which is out now. You can find on Amazon. Thank you so much for coming back on to KMOX.
Thank you so much for having me on.
A lot happened over the weekend in Portland. Going to bring on a friend, Lars Larson, next hour. Rich joins us on the Quiver River Electric guest line, by the way. So our friend Lars Larson, he's someone that's lived in Portland many years, decades. What's really going on there? Maybe we'll get the insight. Coming up next, KMOX.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.